What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Talking Wellness, presented by South Florida Wellness Network. My name is Christian.
This is your boy, Michael. How are we doing, guys?
And welcome back. We have another exciting episode after being gone for 2 weeks.
Chris left us. He went on vacation.
Yeah, as you can see, I got married.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Now, we are back. We took a brief two-week break, for you guys, it'll be about 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken, for the podcast scheduling, because this episode, we're recording it on the 28th. You guys will be seeing it on the 5th of July, if I'm not mistaken. So for you guys, it'll be 3 weeks, but for us, it'll be 2 weeks. So, but we really wanted to make this episode because we are talking about a very important topic, and it kind of ends. This is the last weekend that we can talk about this, so we really wanted to take the opportunity to talk about PTSD awareness, right? So we thought it was really interesting. So, and I'll introduce our two guests for today, or I guess I'll let them introduce themselves. But it's PTSD Awareness Month in June, right? Bringing awareness to that. But there's a community that's heavily impacted by PTSD, as you guys might have remembered from our episode with Brian Sims, who came over and talked a little bit about that. If you haven't checked that out, please do. It was a wonderful episode. But it's also Independence Day is coming up, right? So we thought that what a great opportunity to just kind of merge those two by having veterans come and talk about PTSD and their experience with mental health and the community that they work with, because these both gentlemen also work with community, specifically with veterans. So I'm going to give you both the opportunity to introduce yourselves to what you do, and then we'll start having a cool discussion about PTSD. So whichever one of you wants to start.
My name is Leo Bingham. I work for Goodman Jewish Family Services in Broward County in their Supportive Services for Veterans Families program as an outreach and eligibility specialist. I am a veteran of the Army Infantry. I did just under 6 years. And I've been working in SSVF, Supportive Services for Veterans Families with homeless veterans for almost 4 years now.
That's awesome.
And I'm Sean McPhee. Working for Mission United, which is an initiative started by United Way here in Broward County. I'm a 24-year veteran of the Navy, and I've been working in this particular field for going on about 6 years now. So
That's awesome. Well, thank you both for coming. I really appreciate you both being
Thanks
here.
For having
we had some technical difficulties before we started, so they really pulled through, you know, and
yeah,
I really appreciate the both of you being here. So we're getting into some serious conversations today, right? We're going to try to keep it a little bit lighthearted, you know, because that's kind of how Michael and I do things. We are getting into very serious topics. So we do want to offer our listeners and our viewers a little bit of a warning. We are going to get into topics of suicide awareness. We're going to get into topics about homelessness. We're going to get into topics about trauma and what PTSD is. So if that might be a little bit intense for you, that is okay. You can always watch our this episode at a later time, maybe with some supportive people right next to you, and just know that we still care about you, even if you can't watch this episode, okay? So, but we definitely want to have these conversations because it's important to bring awareness about this very sometimes sensitive and sometimes not so hard to talk about topic, which is trauma and PTSD, right? So I say we get straight into the conversation, right? So there's a lot of really interesting places that we can go to, but let's focus on what PTSD is so we have an understanding on the conversation that we're about to have. So this is this website is the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, and they use the DSM-5 definition of how to diagnose PTSD. PTSD, there's a couple criteria that fit into, and obviously it's the DSM-5. Those who don't know, that's from the American Psychological Association. They use this book as their method of telling people what type of conditions they're experiencing, right? Like if they have depression, if they have anxiety. Psychologists use this book pretty on a regular basis, right? So this is a couple of the criteria. Number one, the person was exposed to death, threatened death, actual or threatened serious injury, or
actual threatened sexual violence in the following ways: direct exposure, witnessing the trauma, learning that the trauma happened to a close relative or a close friend, and indirect exposure to adverse details of the trauma, usually in the course of professional duties, such as, check this out, first responders, medics, and military personnel. The second criteria, or criteria B, is the traumatic event is persistent, re-experienced in the following ways. Unwanted, upsetting memories, nightmares, flashbacks, emotional distress after exposure to traumatic reminders, or physical reactivity after exposure to traumatic reminders. And then in C, criterion C is avoidance of trauma-related stimuli after the trauma in the following ways. Trauma-related thoughts or feelings, trauma-related reminders. Now, there's more to it, but I think that's a good spot to stop and just talk about what that means necessarily. So part of the reason why I also wanted to bring the both of you in is because I want to hear a little bit about your story and see if you've ever struggled with any of these emotions, because maybe it wasn't 100% PTSD, but these are common emotions that we see across veterans all over, right? So I'm curious to hear, what are your thoughts on this idea, maybe some of your experience, if you're willing to share.
You go? Sure, I'll go first. So, you know, getting a little personal here and everything else, I am 100% service connected with the VA for PTSD. You know, it's yeah, you know, you hear it a lot. Every day is a struggle and everything. You know, I'm a very, you know, the way it affects me is I very up and down and everything else. You know, you get your peaks and valleys. But man, some of the, you know, they say, you know, kind of outweighs each other and everything, but you know, like for me, it's like the valleys just are, you know, it's hard to kind of put it into words and everything else. It's almost like, you know, I've gotten to a point where I can see when it's, you know, it's starting and everything. And I don't know, the best way I can describe it is it's almost like, you know, you're watching like a, you know, maybe like a accident train wreck and like, so, but you can't stop it, you know, and everything, even though, you know, it's where you can see where it's heading and everything. You know, my own, you know, I've gotten, it's actually fairly recently, it was late last year where I was actually able to, make a, you know, huge improvement in everything else. You know, it was actually just before I started, working at my current job and everything, but no, it was, you know, obviously PTSD impacts everyone differently. You know, we can get into, you know, the kind of like the treatment and stuff that's available to it as well. You know, I am getting, you know, piggybacking off of, you know, how it impacts everyone differently, you know, what I found to help me out was maybe not, you know, the most, you know, it's kind of off the beaten path of what I found that
not
was able
the most
to help
like
me.
Conventional
yeah,
way,
like,
yeah.
Not, thank you, then. That's what the word I was looking for. But, you know, it's what I found that helped me actually start to, you know, process, unpack a lot of, you know, what had been, I don't know, weighing me down, so to speak, and everything else. But you know, transitioning from the military was very, you know, it was pretty rough. You know, I'm not gonna lie. You know, I know I kind of feel like I'm rambling here and everything.
No, please, that's what this is for. Hey, this podcast is talking.
Yeah, there's plenty of people that you might not believe it. They're probably in your same shoes that probably need to hear the same story. So
you know. If I get into like the treatment aspect of it, there's a few different, you know, main methods of treatment for it. You know, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. That's more of, you know, seeing what. I'm not a therapist. I mean, I'm just putting it out there. I'm not qualified. You know, this is just based on my understanding of it and having, you know, done a bit of it and everything else. You know, cognitive behavioral therapy. What that's about is like you're going to expose yourself to situations that, you know, are stressful, maybe triggering to you and everything else. Mm-hmm. You could be, you know, keeping a journal and everything else. And then you're working with a mental health professional as to, you know, unpacking exactly, you know, what it is that is causing that to be a triggering event for you and everything. I haven't done this one, but I've looked into it and it's been recommended to me. It's called ART, Accelerated Resolution Therapy. And that's more of looking into, you know, what your triggers are and what it is about them that when you ever see that, hear it, whatever it is that triggers it, what your mind has that attached to in your head that causes you to, you know, decline, you know, get triggered and everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
It's essentially they're trying to make you associate whatever that is with something else other than
you know, what it is that triggers you from your past.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Like I said, I haven't, it's you know, like I haven't done any sessions of that yet, but as far as my understanding of it, that's kind of what it, you know, what it entails and everything.
Hey, we're all for giving resources here, right? Whatever works for you, works for you, right?
For sure.
So thank you for sharing, Leo. Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. Sean, I would love to hear from you too. Maybe some of those struggles that you've experienced in the past when you came back from the Navy and stuff like that.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard letting go because, you know, I actually, with 24 years in the service, I saw a lot of stuff up close, you know, doing humanitarian relief. You know, I've gone toe-to-toe with some of our foreign navies. I've And, you know, I've seen, I've lost a lot of good sailors underneath my command over the years, you know, and it was rough, you know. So one of the things that for me was I joined a group called Mankind Project, and they use a lot of American, Native American Indian type techniques of seeking oneself out. It wasn't a group for, hey, let's tell you how to fix yourself. It was a safe space to be yourself.
I love that.
But there was no shame. There was no, hey, you, whatever it was, whatever, because we were a whole bunch of different groups of individuals with some with drug addiction, some with, you know, sexual abuse issue. It was a safe space where men could be men without fear, or those that we do are accepting of those that think of themselves in a male, you know, view. We're very open to that. So using a lot of different techniques that I found all the way were able to even help me in my current job on how to approach people and how to talk to people to de-escalate. It was a great open space where I could share those things without fear of anybody looking at me going, you do what? And you cried? No. Mm. And then, of course, I have a very supportive family as well. So, and then, you know, a lot of, you know, great people have met along the way, you know, just by sharing and what they've done, it makes things much easier.
Yeah, we talk about it here all the time, the importance of support and like how crucial that is to your, not only your, when you're struggling with substance use, but when you're struggling with mental health too, like that support could be the thing that changes your life forever, right? We've had people come on this podcast, share their stories and their stories of recovery. And like literally every single one of them at some point shared, somebody came and gave me a helping hand and gave me some support.
As much as we like to think of ourselves as superheroes of humans, sometimes, like he said, almost every time we saw when someone changed their lives, it came with a huge level of support from someone, whether they knew them personally or someone that came randomly in their life and impacted them, whether it be you know, someone that's doing the kind of work that we're doing or someone that's doing stuff that you guys do to help former vets. So it's just, you need support in your life and you just don't really know where it's going to come from sometimes. And that's why you got to also be open to that support.
Absolutely. Yeah. So actually I'm glad that we're talking about this because it leads a little bit into my next question. You mentioned a little bit there, a big part of PTSD based on kind of what media and what I've learned from other conversations with other veterans is that a big part of that trauma comes from the experience of loss. Loss of fellow friends, fellow coworkers, fellow team members, whatever you want to call it. So I'm very curious to hear today, now that you're in this road to kind of getting better and you're starting to utilize these strategies to get well and then teach those strategies to other people, how do you, as a veteran who has experienced these emotions, how do you deal with loss in the midst of it happening or after it happened?
I could go with that one. It's always a tough thing to deal with loss, especially those that you've served with or served alongside too, is the good thing is always trying to remember the good times. Even though you've been in some tight spots and just remember that you know, all those times you supported each other, it will always be rough. I mean, I keep definitely a lot of the photo albums and a lot of those individuals that, you know, I've lost along the way and I still reach out to their families from time to time. Those ones I'm super close with, you know, checking up on them, you know, even though they may not know I'm checking up on them, but I scan the social medias and stuff and just see how they're doing and, you know, how things are changing in their lives and hopefully, you know, be there when they need me.
Awesome. What about you, Leo? What do you think?
Might be a little lengthy. I promise I will tie it. I promise I will.
I love this. Into Let's this do it.
And everything else. I just keep that in mind. Okay. I promise. I will get there.
Okay.
So So in the military, like when you have barracks and stuff like that on post and everything, those, you know, like I'm in the Army, so where the soldiers sleep and everything, like the front desk there, they have to be manned 24-7. And it's called close quarters, CQ. And it's like you have CQ duty. It's a 24-hour shift straight. You and one other person, you know, you get there for 24 hours. You can imagine you get to know them pretty well.
Yeah,
and everything there. And when I first got to Fort Bragg, after I got out of airborne school and everything, you know, I got my first CQ duty at the barracks there and everything. And, you know, the guy who I'm on duty with, you know, I never met him before and everything. And I'm sure, you know, Sean can tell you, like, when you're in the military and you meet someone else that's from, like, you know, you're where you're from and stuff like that, you know, you're like, oh. And, like, I'm from Connecticut originally, and what I found is that, well, no against any place else, but, like, it tends to be like, it's not just people from Connecticut, like people from New England. We tend to be, oh, New England, you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah, the guy who, you know, I'd never met him before, he comes there on CQ, you know, we kind of bonded immediately because he's also from New England. You know, I went to, you know, college in Boston and everything, and he played hockey for UMass Boston and everything. So we learned about it. And, you know, my name's Leo. He's like, oh, my son's name is Leo. You know, we were both young parents, you know, he had a family and, you know, a couple of kids and stuff like that. So, you know, you bond over that and, you know, 24-hour shift and everything. You know, talk about a whole load of stuff and everything. But, you know, that passed. It's like, hey, man, this guy, you know, Mike, you know, he's really cool, you know, and everything. And, you know, a few weeks later, you know, you hear, because it's a small knit community where I was and what I was going through, the training and everything. They're like, yeah, you know, we're talking amongst ourselves. And you hear, you know, some of the guys are talking, hey, yeah, you know, someone that we're in training with, he was in that movie, Miracle, you know, by Disney with Kurt Russell about the 1980 USSR hockey game and everything. And everyone was like, and we're like, oh, really? You know, I hadn't seen the movie at that point and everything. But it was like, oh, really? Oh, okay. I guess I'll keep an eye. You know, it's one of those weird things, you know, you get to know, like, well, someone, you know, this actor's trying to be, you know, now he's on the road to becoming, you know, a Green Beret and everything. But so, you know, I remember if a little bit more time passed. I promise I'm getting to the point.
You're good. You're good.
I told you it's going to be a little winding here.
Go.
You're good, brother. You're good.
So a little bit of time had passed, and you know, I come to find out because I looked it up, and I was like, who is this that was in the movie? It was 24 hours with the shift, and the guy never mentioned it once. You know, he used to be an actor, you know, and stuff like that, because he didn't want to get gonna watch my mouth and stuff like that. But you know, the cadre, the people who run, you know, the, or like the you would think of them in, like, if you were at a college, if the faculty, if you want to put it in, you know, civilian terms and everything, you know, they would, if they found out that, you know, someone was an actor and stuff like that, they would just be putting the screws to him.
Messing with him and whatnot.
He didn't want that, but he was just the most humble guy, you know, that's, and, you know, I got to know him and his family pretty well and stuff like that. Nice guy whenever we would see each other and stuff like that and training, you know, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's Mike, you know, you can call first names there, Michael Mantenuto and everything. And, you know, I got to know him really well because he eventually did, you know, they all did find out, this is him and everything.
They always find out, don't they?
And everything. And of course, they're, and I saw it, unfortunately, you know, they put the screws to him. They kind of, you know, focused in on him and everything else. And he had, you know, some issues that caused him to where he had to, you know, withdraw from the Special Forces qualification course that we were in at the time. But he eventually, he went to the regular Army, but he came back. And, you know, he made it through. He, you know, got his Green Beret, his Special Forces tab, went off to 1st Special Forces Group, which is right over in Fort Lewis, Washington, and their AO area of operation is Asia. I promise I'm getting to the point. I know I'm getting I promise. I know. It's funny. You know, we got this moment of levity. I'm sorry I'm about to hit you with a gut punch here and everything. But,
it's part
you
of
know,
it.
I,
we
I
need
guess
to
you
talk
kind of
about
figured
this.
That it was coming and everything. But, so, yeah, great guy, you know, got to know him, most humble dude you ever known and everything. And, you know, the guy that I knew, he loved his family so much, loved his son. You recognize that in another, you know, father and everything.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, in 2017, he killed himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he, you know, had been an actor and stuff like that, you see a few websites and stuff like that pick it up, you know, former Disney actor, you know, Green Beret commits suicide and everything else. And then, you know, you got the Daily Mail, they got pictures of him because he shot himself in his vehicle and everything, and they're posting pictures of, you know, the vehicle with his blood in it and everything. And
yeah.
But I guess, you know, getting back to the point and everything, you know, when I think of, you know, that when I think of him, you know, in everything, you know, I do my best to, you know, I don't think of where he ended up, but you know, I think of Mike. You know, there's this great shot of him in that, because obviously, you know, I watch Miracle now. I try to make it like every, you know, Memorial Day and stuff like that. But he's got this one scene alone with Kurt Russell in the movie and everything, and it ends with him, you know, he's got this big old smile on his face and everything else. And you know, whenever I think back to him and everything, think back to Mike, that's the image that I have of him. Is him with that big smile on his face.
Awesome. Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't. You know, it's not like I'm forgetting about, you know, what ended up and what happened and everything. But you know, getting back to the point that you know I started with, you know, when I as far as coping and stuff like that, that's how that's what I try to do. Is that
focus on where the positives as opposed to the negatives.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, I do that with the, you know, the other guys that I served with that either, you know, died overseas or you know, I think I told you before we started this, you know, I've had I think more guys I've served with have committed suicide than have died, you know.
Yeah.
Overseas and stuff like that.
That's wild, man.
I think we as humans, it's very easy to find a lot of reasons to not like someone, you know, but it's if you flip that, it can be very easy to find a lot of reasons to also like someone. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all about perspective, and that's what it really is.
And it
is.
Goes to yourself,
you guys
too.
Both mentioned that. Yeah. You know, it's about shifting that perspective, and instead of thinking of him as like that person, I'm thinking of him on the good side. And that's really what life is about, you know.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, that leads perfectly into the next topic that I really wanted to hit on. We talked briefly before the podcast, what are some topics that we really want to get into? And one of them that we see a lot for a lot of people who struggle with PTSD is the suicide rate. Mm-hmm. It's really high. I remember, again, and I'm probably going to keep referencing back to the Brian Sims episode because he gave a lot of really good information that I really recommend you guys to check out. But one of the things that we specifically were talking about, I remember clear as day, was how high that number is. Now, sadly, I don't remember the specific number. And I apologize.
The number that gets thrown out there is 22 a day. Yeah. And
you go.
Where I've spoken to some guys, you know, you get your pedantics.
Yeah,
like, oh, actually, if you calculate, it's not whatever. But it's still frighteningly
it's a staggering
high.
Number. Yeah.
But one point that he said that I it like rings in my head like a bell. One is too many.
Yeah, of course.
And that when he look, I got chills right now. Like I remember when he said those words, and it rung because any person that decides to take their life is one too many. You know what I'm saying? It's like. And it really it changes the perspective and obviously I'm not here to like praise anything or give flowers or anything, but it does change my perspective for a lot of people that come back home, a lot of veterans who come back home and now they have to deal with this emotion, this trauma, because it's not easy, and it hurts in to a degree that a lot of them choose this is the way out, right? So where I'm trying to go is, like, how can we, by having these conversations, by doing the work that you guys do, how can we instill and inspire people to choose another way, right? And I guess that directly leads into the third point that I wanted to hit on, which is I think that a lot of people who choose this route is because they feel they have no other choices or they have no other way out, right? We were talking a little bit, Sean, beforehand about when you're lacking resources, it's like you're in a tunnel, right? And it's like there's no way out of a dark tunnel, right? But then that resource pops up and boom, light at the end of the tunnel. You start walking towards that. Still dark, but you have hope now, right? So I'm very curious to hear from your guys' perspective that you work with a lot of people in the community who have these feelings that we're talking about, these feelings that share, right? So I guess the question that I'm trying to ask is like, what do you recommend to those people who are mainly veterans or maybe people in general who are just feeling PTSD, because PTSD doesn't only affect veterans. We're talking about veterans, but it affects a huge amount of people who are not also part of the forces. So a great question that I want to ask you then is, what are some resources that you would recommend for people who are struggling with these intense emotions so they can hopefully find some light in that tunnel?
Mine, obviously, you know, would be the, you know, the, what I mentioned before, you know, getting with a mental health care professional. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look into the various forms of therapy that are, you know, available to you and everything. You know, I think I said it before, and I'm sure I'll keep prefacing it and everything. I am not a mental health care professional. You know, I can't tell you this is what works and stuff like that. I can tell you from my own, you know, perspective and what has helped me out. And like I said, it's a bit, you know, unconventional and stuff like that. But, if I was going to refer, I wouldn't recommend the route that I went, but, you know, I would always recommend go see a mental health professional, you know, and see what, you know, therapy is available for you and everything else. You know, me and, you know, my role and stuff like that when I'm, you know, out in the community and everything else. I know now, we're the main concern is with housing and everything. You know, if someone's unhoused, you know, that's obviously the main concern, and especially with our organization, that is the number one priority. But as I've become more been able to process a lot of, you know, my own issues and everything, I found that I can recognize it and see in other people a lot better.
Similar
now.
Struggles.
Yep. Yeah. And so, you know, I found that what I'm doing a lot lately when I do encounter someone, you know, that I see is, you know, having that inner battle and everything is, you know, I'm always working to facilitate them and let them know what's available. That's like,
do you find yourself more drawn to people like that, that like have those similar struggles? That are like, do you see like a bit of yourself, but do you see like, you know, I was going through that at one point, I feel a little bit more passionate.
I recognize the, you know, I can see them where, you know, I don't want to get, you know, to in these, you know, I don't know, these stereotypical stuff, but you know, you can see it, you know, in their eyes and stuff like that. And how, but yeah, you know, like I said, I recognize that in them and everything. And, you know, I realize that, you know, that's the thing I have to keep telling myself in my role and everything. I know, because it was more like the bit of a tangent here, but you know, when I was first getting interviewed for this, I remember our CEO, she, like, one of the questions she threw out was like, oh, like, you know, what superpower would you want if you could have it and stuff like that. She's like, well, she's like, most people say, oh, I'd be Superman. And my thing is like, if that was me, I would feel an immense, you know, guilt, because you can't save everyone. You know, that's how I feel. Yeah. But you know, I have to tell myself that, you know, when I'm out there and I recognize that, you know, I'm interacting with, you know, a lot of the homeless veterans and everything, is I can, you know, let them know what's available to them and everything. But you know, just like you can't save everyone. You know, you can't. They have to be ready for it, and that's the one. And it, more than anything else, like I know you heard me mention it, like, you know, it was just fairly recently, like late last year, where I made a huge improvement. And you know, I realized that a big part of that was that I was ready to. That's something that I think kind of gets lost in it, because, you know, even when we're, you know, you guys are great and everything, you know, PTSD awareness and everything else, getting the resource out there, the info and everything. But, you know, at the same time, you have to realize that, you know, a huge component of it is someone really has to be, they have to be ready to.
Yeah, it's the personal responsibility within oneself to accept that.
Yeah, I think that was looking back on it, that was the number one thing of when, you know, what was it that caused me to have it in, I was finally ready to. You know, like I said, that's just from my perspective and everything. You know, I want to put that disclaimer out there and everything. I am not a mental health professional, but that's just from my experience.
Yeah, but we even talk about it here all the time. You know, we believe in the five core concepts of wellness and recovery. Are HPRESS, hope, personal responsibility, education, support. and self-advocacy, right? it's that first step, that personal responsibility. And, you know, and we talk about all the time that it's wonderful how they all kind of work together, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that, taking that step of personal responsibility can give you hope, right? That hope can be found in the support that you find, right? That support can teach you ways how to self-advocate.
Yeah.
And all of this is encompassed under education, learning about yourself, learning about why you're reacting the way you're reacting, why you're feeling this way, and moreover, how to find the help that I need, right? I love that you mentioned that because it is responsibility. That's the scary part, isn't it? That's the fear, taking that first step and actually deciding to do something about it. Right. So that's why this is happening. Right. Because we're trying to inspire people to take that step. Right. Sean, I'm very curious to hear from your perspective, too, based on everything that we're talking about. The idea of lack of resources and homelessness and suicide awareness and loss.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily lack of resource. It's lack of information getting to those individuals needed. Now, here in Broward, we use Broward 211. It's your helpline. Call 211. If you don't know, somebody will pick up the phone, tell them what's going on, and they'll be able to direct you to, I mean, we have, you know, Broward Health, we have, you know, Operation Sacred Trust is out there, we got Henderson.
Well, Operation Sacred Trust is no longer out
there. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot.
I used to work there.
Sorry, I forgot. They changed.
That's all right.
Yeah, they weren't what they used to be. But there's definitely quite a few organizations that are there to help. It's getting that information, especially, you know, for individuals. Now, look at our movies. Look at our commercials. Army of One. You know, we're bred that we are steel. We are iron. We can, you know, we run toward the fight. And when you're done, you still have that mentality when you get out.
Mm.
And it's a hard vulnerability for someone to let somebody else. I'm carrying the load, so you don't have to. It's my job to make sure that you get home safe. But I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about you. Mm. And then when it comes, it's also for not only just the veteran or military member to recognize it in themselves, it's for the family members to do that training to recognize those things that I believe that's one of those things we should talk about as they're exiting military service, how to recognize in your partner, your spouse, your brother, to recognize when they're in that space and how to get them, because you got to be careful, especially when it comes to something like this. You may think you're doing well, but you might actually be triggering them in that space, making things worse. But it is, you know, but we just have to be supportive and take those steps, like, you know, doing those trainings and understanding what it is, especially if you live with somebody who's a first responder or a veteran. Somebody needs to be ready for that. Somebody needs to go, when do I see that turn in that individual to make sure that we're there for them when they need us?
Yeah. So. And another thing, providing resources for the families.
Yes.
As well. You know, because, like, at least I've always had this belief, and maybe, you know, I don't know if people agree with me, but I always felt that the soldiers are the veterans, but the families also have to deal with those struggles as well, because they're there with them, right?
That's why we have organizations like ours that we don't just help, we help the veteran family as well.
Exactly. It's such a crucial thing, because, like, nobody in my personal life, there's a couple of familial things going on at the moment, and, like, it's weird because nobody really understands the purpose and the power of family until something happens where that is put to the test, you know. And I see it right now in my life, right? There's some struggles going on, and now it's affecting all of us, you know. So I can't even begin to imagine, like, what it is for when a veteran comes home and they have to now start living this new life, essentially, where everything is different. Nothing is the same. And they're supposed to be like, all right, back to normal, switch. No, right? And, like, the family gets to see that. So I would love to hear your perspective a little bit. Obviously, if you don't want to share too much in detail, that's completely fine. But I would love to hear, how was that transition when you came home with your family? How was that experience? Obviously, if you don't want to get into many specifics, that's okay. I know I said it already, but I really want to make sure that you guys are comfortable. But if you're willing to share a little bit how that experience was, I would love to hear that.
All right, I got it. Yeah. So I used to either say in the military, somebody really, really didn't like me or really, really hated me, because I had a hard time staying in one tour in one place because I was constantly being deployed. Matter of fact, my last C rotation of 4 years, I deployed 3 times back-to-back on 3 different C commands.
Wow.
Because in my job as an enlisted navigator, I'm actually what they call a red line. The ship cannot get underway without me. Somebody of my rank and my pay grade has to be on board.
Okay.
No brag, just fact.
Yeah, just fact. Yeah. So whether it's be me or somebody else. So it just, I guess I was in the right place at the right time. As soon as I got deployed, I came back, deployed again, came back, deployed, came back. You know, coming back is can be quite difficult. You know, for me particularly, when I deploy, I turn a switch off. The only thing I do is I focus 100% of my time on my work. I don't even think about back home. It's an emotional switch that I turn off, and it's very hard to turn back on when I get back, is because I'm used to it. I'm gone. You know, or in my early days in the early 90s, communication isn't what it used to be. Right. I mean, we used to make a laugh about it. I used to remember calling home using a ham radio because we bounced off a ham radio. Hello, honey, I love you. Over. And then there would be an echo. And then the ham operator would switch over and allow her to teach back. You know, snail mail. I mean, there was no internet where I was. If you wanted to call home, it cost you $300 for one phone call calling home from international because you're trying to catch everything up because you have no idea when you're going to pull in port again.
Yeah.
You know, communications is very rough. I mean, that where you write letters to each other before you deploy and you just open them up as you go. You know, day one, day two, because you have no idea if you send mail as you're moving, because sometimes when you're in, particularly in the Navy, when you're going to port and then you're off to go to the next station, I can't tell you a number of times we were diverted to a different port we weren't expecting to be in because, operational commitment changed, or we had an engine failure, we needed a repair, and the only place we could go is here. You got mail that I can tell you back early in my career, I got mail that showed up, you know, from like 6 weeks ago, and I got the letter that got sent after that because the mail was chasing us around the Mediterranean trying to catch up with us because we kept diverting ports.
Wow.
So, you know, and then coming back and trying to become emotional, especially when you have children and a spouse, is trying to turn that back on and not being trying to be distanced, and, you know, your spouse is trying to understand why are you so distance. Why are you sitting on the other side of the room? Because you're trying to get that emotional engine start up again because you had to turn off. It's the only way, you know, because this is the only way I can survive being in where I was doing my day-to-day job because I had to turn it off. All I could focus is all my energy on my job and my crew, because if not, I couldn't get the job done. So, and then coming back, trying to get back. Sometimes it takes a little while to get back into that. So,
yeah. Obviously, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I've never been in the active forces, so I have media to depend on to see how it works or whatever. Mm-hmm. When they're truthful, right? But I'll never forget when I was little, there was the first Transformers movie. I don't know if you ever saw it, but
when you were little, the first Transformers movie. Wow, that was so
long. Yeah.
Made me feel old.
Yeah, sorry. But I'll never forget one specific scene that always tugged in my heartstrings, even as a little kid. There's, I forgot his name, but the actor is talking to his wife who just had a baby through the internet, and all hell breaks loose in wherever they're at, and the signal just starts like fading, and then boom, into the action. He has to grab his gun and start fighting. And that specific image has always stayed with me because it's like a reminder of like how serious it is, right? Anything can happen at any moment and you need to go and that's it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you mentioned that emotional switch, because, you know, at least obviously we've talked about many times here how movies can sometimes go to very large
extremes.
I'd like
to ask that question,
which we can talk about that right now. But that specific part always got to me, like especially that emotional toll that it can take. Right. So that's why I like to ask these type of questions, like how was your experience? And now we go to you, Leo. How was your experience coming back home after you came back?
From deploying or when I got out of the military?
Well, I guess we can kind of go both ways, you know.
Yeah, mine was, I guess, you know, if you want to talk about family and everything else, you know, mine's a, I guess, you know, maybe useful for, you know, other people to hear this who may be in a similar situation that I was when I was in. Because, you know, unfortunately, I did not have, you know, the, like, the best, if any, you know, family support in there. You know, I didn't have, you know, you know, I was a father, as a young father and everything, but, you know, this is a whole other issue and stuff like that. But, you know, me and, you know, my wife, my mother, my child, we had separated due to her issues and everything else. But, you know, so I never, you know, it's not like I had, you know, that even in, like, you know, when I was out of basic training, you know, you don't have your phone. The only thing that you can have is letters, you know, it's letter writing. It's like,
yeah, you didn't have that conventional home setting to come back
to. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I remember, like, everyone would get so many freaking letters, and, you know, I would get none. You know, and coming back from, you know, deployment and stuff like that, you know, it's a whole ceremony when you get back to the base. They line you up in formation. You know, it's a whole big dog and pony show. Everyone's family's all there, and, you know, in formation, and then they cut you loose, and, you know, that's the first time you get to see all your family and stuff. You know, everyone's family's running out, and, you know, I didn't have anyone. You know, I'm not saying that for, like, a pity part of stuff, you know, just
saying as
fact. But that's important to talk about.
Because, you know, there might be other people, you know, in similar situations. Mine, you know, coming back from the point, but, you know, it's funny. I tell people that because of the situation of, you know, how volatile my personal life was, yeah, like just before I deployed, because separated from my wife, and unfortunately she was doing things that were endangering the kids and everything. And my son was with her for that time, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to, not only that, I'm going to deploy. My son's with, I don't know what she's doing. You know, she's being dangerous, but thankfully, My son was able to, you know, I got him in a much better place, got away from her, and, you know, my mom came in, and she took him, and so, you know, with a lot of people are like, oh, how did you feel when you were going off to deployment? You know, were you scary? And for me, it was like, my son would say I was fine. Like, it was actually like I was more relaxed than I had been and everything, and you know, for me, like, he was my family. That's what was going to get me back. Yeah. You know, when I was, you know, over in Kandahar and deployed and everything, you know, I would run, you know, every chance I get, you know, I'd go and, you know, run like a mile to and from the USO tent just to talk. He was probably about 3 years old at the time, you know, even if it was just for, like, you know, 30 seconds at, like, you know, 2 a.m. my time, you know, going there just to, you know, even if he's like, you know, he's 3 years old, you know, doesn't want to talk. And saying, that's fine. You know, that's fine, you know, just talking to him, and then, you know, I'd run back and everything.
Holding
so,
that space. Yeah,
yeah, so that's what, you know, going back to the family aspect of it, you know, that's what got me through it and everything.
Nice.
But, you know, as far as even when I got out of the military, you know, I got out at the end of 2015, and that's when I moved on here. I'm not a Florida native. You know, I'm a transplant. But
neither am I.
I am adopted, though. I did stay here for, you know, Hurricane Irma. I didn't retreat, so that makes me an adopted Floridian.
There
so
you go.
Know, that's how it
there
works.
You go.
But no, it's so I, you know, I came down here. You know, this I had my oldest sister. She was down here, and, you know, getting off on a tangent here, but I'm talking about, you know, getting back to civilian life and everything. So, you know, not only was I leaving the military, but I was also, you know, at that point, because I had gotten divorced from my my wife, my son's mother, and I got full custody of my son in the divorce, thankfully. And so, you know, I'm not only am I leaving the military, and you're leaving, you know, what's very familiar to you, your structure wise and everything. You know, I all of a sudden I'm moving to a new state. I've got full custody of my son. I don't know what I'm going to be doing for work. So you can imagine, you know, how it gets stressful.
Yeah,
that would be
absolutely.
You know, so it was rough, you know, and then you get, and it's very, you know, when I was gonna, you know, in 2015, the Army, and I think, you know, across the board, you know, all the branches, they have, it's gotten better to where they have specific, you know, training that they give, you know, people that are about to get out, as far as, you know, acclimating back to civilian life, whether it's, you know, helping them, you know, this is how, you know, applying for jobs and stuff like that, these and everything. But, you know, they put forth an effort to try and help you get acclimated back to civilian life. But, you know, it's still, you know.
It's so funny. It almost sounds, not to, like, compare the two, but it almost sounds like prison reform. Like, when I hear, like, people talking about coming out of prison and coming back into the real life, it's like they have a lot of levels of reform.
Because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's structured. You know, in a lot
exactly,
of ways, you're not,
structure,
you're not
yeah.
in charge of a lot of, you know, you don't have a lot of freedom in, and everything else. You know, if you guys, I can tell you, you know, that's something that maybe, like, people haven't served, like, don't really understand, is that, like, you know, when I was, you know, you get some young 18, 19-year-old kid who goes out, you know, drinking on the weekend, gets arrested for a DUI. Guess what? The whole company's coming back at 02 in the morning on Sunday, and you're staying there.
Yeah.
And, yes, you are all getting chewed out for this 18-year-old kid.
Yep. Been there.
Yep.
The unit.
Yeah.
steel, like you said.
So, you know, like I said, it's stuff like that. You know, if you're, I was infantry, so if you go out to the field and you're training, if you lose any piece of equipment, you know, with nods, or night vision, anything that is left out there, you're not coming back. You're until it's found. How long is it going to take? You got to stay out there a week, a few days, stuff like that. If you got families at home, they're waiting on you.
Yeah.
Tough. You are government property, pretty much, you know. Yeah. But you know, wow. So yeah, it's from every aspect of there. You don't realize like
it's like a life shock.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was good. I had an officer tell me, and I still live. It was good. He told me early on because I always had it in my head. He was like, you know, look, you know, the Army and the military in general will control as much of your life as you allow it to.
Yep.
you know, it's something that I always kept in mind.
Hey, I'd say the government in general wants everybody. Yeah. But no, I absolutely agree, for sure.
That is awesome perspective, and I appreciate you both sharing, because that is... See, I'd never heard of that before. That's why I love having this podcast,
I have a question. Okay, so back to, like, the movie thing.
Yeah, that along was going to be my next question.
As far as misconceptions or things like that, what's, like, something... biggest misconception as far as movies or things that you've heard? What's something that's extremely bothered you in this personal space?
I can tell you what's irritating. It's not necessarily that bothers me.
Yeah.
Okay, the first thing that is drilled into you when you get into basic training and stuff like that is always not a number. Okay, so you hear these people say, I'll see you at 0800 and stuff like,
okay, there you go. That's interesting.
It's never
okay.
Anything like that.
Okay, there you go.
You know, when you're talking over comms and stuff like that, you'll hear them say, all right, over and out.
No.
It's either over or it's out.
Okay, there you go.
Those are two different things.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we're talking about this because we talked about it also with Brian Sims.
Yeah.
And that's where this question came about, because you see it all the times in movies. Like, these people... like doing these most superhero like things, and you're like, whoa, that's a lot. But specifically media, and I'm interested to hear your perspective on this specifically, because recently I was watching this guy on TikTok specifically. I don't know if he's active or if he's a veteran. I've never been able to like figure that out, but he apparently is a soldier, and he makes these funny videos comparing all the branches, how would each branch react to
that's as old as time,
right? But he does it now on TikTok because that's making jokes modern, right?
Yeah.
But one thing that I've always found interesting is the way he portrays the Marines, where he portrays them as these like vicious screaming at your face kind of people, right?
Was he a Marine?
I don't know, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I genuinely don't know. I need to look more into his TikTok, right? And he would joke about the Coast Guard. We talked about the Coast Guard jokes. Yeah. He would joke about the Navy, how they supposedly have it easy, and then the Air Force, where they have it even easier. So I'm very curious to hear, based on your perspective and your experience, because you both are from different branches. Yeah. I'm curious to hear, how does that affect your psyche when you're actively working in the force?
Oh, I mean, when it comes to media and movies and stuff like that, even we just laugh it off because, you know, most of the time they don't get it right, or they only, you know, tell you part of the story. I won't confirm or deny that some of the commands I have been on have been in the media for different reasons.
Of course,
And, of course, they exaggerated. And we kind of just sat around and laughed, go, that's not exactly how the way it happened.
Right.
You know, they centralize. They got to make the news.
Dramatize it.
Yeah, that's right. So,
have you ever seen a film where you feel they did get it right? Do you feel like, yes,
what's
they
the closest
they
depiction?
Understood.
That's a good question.
They talked to somebody and they made it right.
Well, not one that's dramatized, but, you know, obviously you can look at your documentaries and stuff like that.
Of course, yeah.
Was it Restrepo? I believe it's what it's called.
Okay.
Based on the book called War and stuff like that, but the movie is called Restrepo. That's, you know, I remember the only reason that comes to mind is that I remember going to see it while I was going through airborne school, while I was actually in. Granted, I hadn't deployed yet or anything like that, but even, you know, my short time, less than a year in the military, I was like, oh, okay, this is, you know, it's a documentary and stuff like that, but, you know, it gives you a good idea, especially of the... some of the, I guess, maybe drawbacks of being in the military too, and everything else.
Awesome. So Hello, Ed. Welcome. We had some technical difficulties, so we decided to do a quick switcheroo. This is Ed. You guys might have remembered Ed from our men's mental health awareness episode, which was very lovely. But, Ed, we definitely want to bring you on because you helped me find these two wonderful guests for the podcast. So we definitely wanted to give you the props that you deserve. But we're talking about movies, and we're talking about how unrealistic sometimes they can be. But I wanted to bring up this perspective. Because we started talking a little bit, and I think it fits to what we're talking about. So there's a show, very popular show back in 2017, 2019 era, called The Punisher on Netflix. Marvel show, back when Marvel was trying to make more grittier content with their whole Netflix thing and whatever. But there was the show The Punisher. And if you know anything about The Punisher, is that one of the things that he struggles with is PTSD. Mm. And so did one of his fellow soldiers that we see in the show. Now, there's a specific scene where this soldier comes back home and he's having trouble sleeping. So one of the things that he does is he grabs a shovel and he digs a foxhole in the back of his house. And thank you for teaching me the term. And he lays in it to sleep. And it helps him sleep better. So this is something that I didn't have the chance to ask Brian, so I definitely want to ask you guys. Do you think that there are some things out there that it kind of goes into the conversation of, like, do you feel that there's a movie out there that gets it right? It is kind of the same thing. Do you think that there's some of those little, like, tiny details about life after the military that kind of just stay with you? And you feel that it's just a part, it's just a normal part of your life now, like maybe waking up really early or like different habits of sleeping or anything like that. And anything you guys want to share?
Well, I know for me, obviously, you know, this is pretty personal and stuff like that. You know, it'll change based on who you are and everything. But I'm a pretty disciplined guy as far as, you know, like my schedule and everything else. You know, yes, I'm up, sun's up every morning, going to the gym and everything. And then, you know, I very much, you know, work, you know, getting home and stuff like that. I get home with my son, I take him to the gym, you know, help him out and everything else with it, whatever he needs. But, you know, for me, I was always, like, even before I got into the military, that's kind of, you know, how I was and everything. But, you know, like I said, it'll vary because, you know, not everyone that's in the military is disciplined. I'm sure, you know, Sean can tell you as well. Plenty of guys who, you know, as soon as like that structure is kind of removed or becomes a little bit lax and everything, like if you're deployed, they're good. But as soon as you come back and you know, everything that they're doing isn't monitored 24/7, they kind of fall by the wayside or, you know, fall apart and everything. But, like for me, that's one thing that I definitely, you know, kept, you know, as a holdover from the military and stuff like that, is kind of like that structure and everything else. And, you know, for me, I realized that, you know, and when I'm having, you know, I like I said, when you see that slow moving, you know, train or car crash and stuff like that, I see it's coming on. That's where, you know, a lot of times I can falter in everything else. And, you know, for me, another thing going back to PTSD and everything is, you know, realizing where, you know, that discipline and that structure and, you know, physical activity and everything, how that all fits into it for me as well with mental health. So that's a big part of it as
interesting.
Well.
Interesting. There the you wellness go. Plan. You keep up with your wellness plan. Yeah, you keep up with your physical health. And guess what? Your mental health follows suit. Isn't that impressive, right? Sean, I would love to hear from you, too. You share with me a story, and I really want you to share it with the viewers.
Oh, share the story again. So, you know, I didn't find too many Navy type movies or even Coast Guard movies that are that accurate. But, you know, there are bits and pieces from it. Even let's talk about like Tom Hanks and Castaway, where after the movie he was sitting there still flicking it because it's a repetition you're used to. Yeah. So in the Navy, it's not a cruise. I mean, we deal with weather. We deal with hurricanes. We deal, you know, when a hurricane comes by, the first thing the ship does is, like, it's cheaper to put it to sea than leave it because, you know, you beach a warship and you're talking about millions, $1 billion to pull that bad boy off and hope you didn't break anything. So, I mean, I'm used to, like, we sleep in what they call coffins. Our dresser is right below where we sleep. So there's three of us, you know, most ships. They've done a lot better in the newer ships about making them more, but the ones I would, basically, I lay on my back. This is between me and the rack at top above me. So these ships rock. it's not like I got a seatbelt. It's right. not like I can, you know, bungee cord myself in. So
right, yeah.
the only way, to, you know, to really sleep soundly was that here's my mattress, here's the bulkhead or wall, and I would wedge myself into that little corner. And I would just, you know, until I felt tight enough, and that's how I would sleep. Well, unfortunately, you know, one of the reasons why my wife and I, because people ask me why our beds are separated, like the I Love Lucy episode, is because when I come back from deployment, you're talking about many, many weeks at sea of it's not just calm, beautiful weather. It's I've been out there where it was storming for like 4 or 5 days where that, you know, you spent half your time walking down the hallway going this way and then this way. So when I come home, I'd wedge myself right up to her point that she would literally sometimes have to elbow me or punch me in the back to get me to move because I was trying to find that comfort spot up to her. So now we had to move because, God forbid, you know, because I still do it even now. I've been out since 2018, and I still do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sleep more comfortable in my office, which I have a single bed. I sleep better up against the wall than I do in my own regular bed because I've got to make sure because I'm so used to that security that I'm used to. And fortunately, still all these years, and also being a quartermaster, I was in charge of the time. So my last job in a cubicle, I asked them, like, hey, could you buy me a wall clock? And they're like, why do you need a wall clock in a cubicle? I said, because the ticking sound comforts me. Mm. As much as you believe it, the
wow.
ticking sound.
Interesting.
Like a the ticking, like tick, tick, is actually a calming sound for me. I actually have, you know, I actually listen to that sometimes when I'm having an anxiety attack. I'll find a,
get a metronome for you.
Yeah, yeah. I'll find something that has a clock ticking. It's a comforting sound for me because my job is to make sure that, because you got to remember, as a navigator, I'm in charge of the time. So as we're transiting to different time zones, I always have to make sure that every single ship on the entire ship is coordinated to make sure that we're all on the exact same time.
Interesting.
Because everything that we do in the military is time-based.
Of course.
So that's the only way you can coordinate stuff. So I'm used to a ticking clock. It's actually a very soothing sound for me.
See, and you know, and we'll go ahead and we'll start closing off. But I just, I don't know if the audience is fully like understanding how I'm feeling right now. This is mind blowing to me. Like this Yay. Is, and I'm not again. I'm not trying to like make you guys like so. All that I'm saying is that this kind of stuff really impresses me because it's the kind of stuff that we don't hear often.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. And like I'm so happy that we're talking about this because I've never heard of this before. These are real things that are happening, right? And now. We know these things, and like if we have family members who struggle with these kind of things, we can hopefully learn to be a little more understanding, right?
Yeah.
Like my, there's somebody in my family, I won't say who it is just in case because I didn't ask if they wanted their name out there, but somebody in my family has a background. They were armed forces. I forgot. I think he was special forces, if I'm not mistaken. He came back home, and like the one thing that kind of freaks him out more than anything else is loud noises.
Yep.
Like we'll be out in public and a balloon will pop. I saw it with my own eyes. It blew my mind. Yeah. A balloon popped and it was such a real reaction. And I've never, because you react to a balloon popping. Like if I clap in your face, of course you're going to go, whoa. But his reaction was like his soul left his body and came back in 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of stuff really blows my mind because it's real. You know, and I guess that's really what it is. I'm more than anything, I'm impressed with reality, the reality that we don't get to talk about very often.
But that is one of the misconceptions of PTSD. They all think it's triggered by the same thing. They all think it's that loud noise. It could be anything. Because depending on which situation we're in, it could be something you're not even realizing that somebody that you're doing could trigger somebody because depending on whichever it was, you know, where they, you know, I've dealt with a sailor that was, you know, in an accident, now he's claustrophobic. Even sitting in a cubicle is claustrophobic for him. But you wouldn't know it unless, you know, until, but every individual is a little different on what triggers them in that particular field. It's not just a loud noise, but it can be, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Piggybacking on that, 4th of July is coming up. That sucks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
So think about that for a moment. Yeah, like that's so insane.
Yeah, neighbors right. need to be mindful that other neighbors. Yes,
same understand. Thing. 4th of July and in New Year's as well. And I don't know. I think what's most annoying is that like oh, okay, I guess my neighbors want to wish me a happy 2:30 p.m. December 31st, you know, stuff like that. Like, at least do it at night, I guess, but I don't know. Yeah, that's just, that sucks. I hate that. I wish people would be a little bit more mindful, but again, I do my best, you know, because I understand, you know, tradition and everything else, but, you know, I do. I really wish that. Be a little bit more mindful, I guess. But.
Yeah, of course. And when I said insane, I don't mean crazy. I think what I mean more is like, again, something that I never thought about. And like, it's these kind of things that really like impact you and make you really think like what's going on out there. But I want to thank you both for being here. Sean and Leo, you guys are amazing. And I loved so hearing your story. I love hearing your perspective on PTSD. As we close out, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. Thanks for making it all the way through. Please make sure to like, subscribe, share the podcast wherever you can. Don't forget, we have our gala, our fundraising gala coming up. The link for all that information is going to be in the description. Please check it out so you can support us and find ways to support us financially. What am I missing? Yeah. So I want to give you this space right now to share any resources, anything from you specifically that you want to share for the audiences, maybe where you work, how they can contact you and stuff like that if they wish to utilize your services. So please.
If you you know, if you or anyone you know or family here in Broward County, homeless veteran or imminently losing housing, maybe got a late notice, something like that. Please reach out to, either Mission United or myself. You can always reach me at Goodman JFS, just ask to speak to the veterans guy and stuff like that. They kind of filter everything to me. You can also, I'll put my work phone out there in my email and stuff like that.
Sure.
Reach out to me via email. It's lbingham@jfsbroward.org, and I'll go ahead and it's the Lima Bravo Indian November Golf Hotel Alpha Mike at Juliet Fox.
I love that.
Bravo Romeo Oscar Whiskey Alpha Romeo Delta.org.
I love that. Sean, please share your two.
Well, Mission United, our goal is to help, homeless veterans, those at high risk. We have six pillars that we try to help with: education, employment, legal aid. Primarily, our goal is housing, because we're under SSVF and HVRP. Those are grants that are given to specifically help veterans and their family get off the street. Easiest number to remember, 211. Broward 211 works very closely with us. Broward 211, just tell them they're a veteran, or you're a veteran, or you're a family member of a veteran, and they'll connect you with us. Or just always remember, when in doubt, you don't know where to go or which resource, call 211, and that will connect you with the resources, connect you with this group here, connect them with us. That's what they're there for. That's what we're there for. We're going to help the veterans, our brothers and sisters, give them a hand up.
Yeah. So thank you all for watching. You guys already know to like and subscribe. For our audio listeners, thank you so much for listening. We see you, we love you, and we're very appreciative for your support. Make sure to give us that 5-star rating. It really helps to push the podcast to more places. And we will see you all next week, where we're going to have a very special guest. I won't tell you any information, but just know that this person that we have scheduled for next week has a heck of a story, which means, of course, that we're doing it again. My story matters. So be aware of that, because this is going to be a good one. I'm telling you. I won't spoil anything. Signing off. Thank you so much for watching. Bye.